How's everybody doing today? All right? Good. Glad to hear it. Welcome again to MidCurrent. If you didn't catch it at the beginning of the hour, my name is Stan. I'm a pastor here. Absolutely thrilled that you could be with us. We are starting, as you just saw here, we are starting a brand new message series today called Two Truths and a Lie. And I know we kind of, you know, Haley and I kind of played a game similar to this as we began the service, but I figured how could we have a series titled Two Truths and a Lie and not actually play a round of this here this morning. And so that's what we're going to do here today. Just to get things going, I'm going to share with you three facts about me. Two of them are true. One of them is a lie. And I'm going to leave it up to all of you to figure out which is which. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, you're going to see the three on the screen here. Here's the three facts about me. Number one, my hair used to be as long as my wife's hair. Long, maybe a little longer, I don't know. But my hair used to be as long as my wife. That's number one. Here's number two. I'm related to NFL kicker. He's a former Viking, a current, I believe, Las Vegas Raider kicker, Dan Carlson. I'm related to an NFL kicker named Daniel Carlson. That's number two. Number three is this. I was the star of a Christian reality TV miniseries. Okay? Those are the three right there. You need to tell me which one is the lie. We'll go piece by piece before I reveal them to you. We'll go piece by piece just to see what you're thinking here. Who thinks the lie is that my hair was once as long as my wife, Erica? Not many hands. All right, we'll find out. We'll find out. Who thinks the lie is that I am related to NFL kicker, former Viking, Dan Carlson? Okay, a few hands going up there. All right, number three. Who thinks the lie is that I was the star of a Christian reality TV miniseries? Some hands going up for that one as well. All right, let's break these down. We got to get to the bottom of this. Number one, my hair was actually as long as my wife, Erica. Take a look right here. You like that? I got more of those too if you guys want it. That's the only one I got right now, okay? My hair was that long. My grandma told me one day I would regret it. I didn't believe her then. I maybe do a little bit right now. Okay, number two. Number two. I actually was, star is maybe little overestimating, but I was the star, I was a participant in, I was a character in a Christian reality TV miniseries called 24/7. I know it's small, but I highlighted myself there. I actually was a participant in a week-long, like, Road Rules meets, you know, Christian TV kind of deal. That's now a curriculum that you can buy online. Kind of a big deal, okay? But number three, then, you figured it out. No, I am not related to NFL kicker Dan Carlson. I am just one of the, you know, millions of proud Swedes who share the last name Carlson. So I'm sorry to say that that is not true, but yes, you are very welcome for that picture of me and Erica when we were about 19 years old. All right, thanks for playing along. I'm sure that it's not a surprise to you to figure out that this series, Two Truths and a Lie, it is not about me. It's actually a series about MidCurrent Church and really why it is that we exist today and why we don't. See, the truth is it's all too common for people to come up with their own ideas about what, you know, church is all about in general. It's easy for people to come up with their own ideas as to why a new church, why a group of people like us would start a new church from the ground up. And maybe you have your own thoughts. Maybe you have your own ideas. You've come up with your own ideas about what church in general is all about, or maybe you've come up with your own ideas about what this church in particular is all about and why we made the decision to start just 4 years ago. We don't want anybody guessing. We don't want anybody filling in the blanks on their own. And so this whole series was designed to share with you exactly why we did and why we didn't start MidCurrent Church. And so I'm glad that you could be here for it today. Like I said at the beginning, if you're visiting with us today, I'm so glad you could be here. This is actually a really perfect time for you to be checking us out today. Today, I'm gonna kick off this series with the first truth that has influenced our decision to start a brand new church 4 years ago. And really, it is the truth as to why any church actually really exists in the world today. Before I get there, before I reveal to you the first truth that I want to talk about today, before I get there, let me begin by just asking you a question, and that question is this. Have you ever lost something really important to you? Have you ever lost something really, really important to you? I remember when we lost, Erica and I remember when we lost or when we thought that we had lost our oldest son, Oli, who was maybe only about 4 years old at the time. It was a spring afternoon a few years ago, and our whole family was spending the afternoon outside. The kids were playing in the yard. Eric and I were kind of cleaning and organizing the garage. We're pulling out bikes. I was running the rest of the gas out of the snowblower that spring. It was a pretty typical spring cleaning kind of afternoon, and we were just about to take a break to eat some lunch. And so we started cleaning up a little bit and herding all three of the kids inside to wash their hands. And our daughter Lucy was with us, and our youngest son Siggy, he was with us inside as we were getting ready for lunch. And so I think Erica yelled, out into the yard, "Holy man, it's time for lunch, buddy." And so we all continued. And we carried on washing our hands, and you know, lunch by this time, it's almost ready, and still there's no Oli. And so Erica asked me, "Hey, Sten, you know, is Oli with you?" And he wasn't with me, but I wasn't even remotely concerned. And so I think I said something to her like, he's not with me, but, I think he's in the backyard. He's coming. We'll grab him. No big deal. So eventually we're actually kind of ready to eat now, and we're sitting at the counter, and still there's no Oli. And so, at this point, we're actually not worried. We're just a little bit annoyed at this point. It's like, "Oh, dude, this kid is so stinking slow. Come on, buddy. Like, let's do this thing, okay?" And so one of us ran into the backyard to grab him, and he wasn't there. Okay, and then the other, I think this was me, I ran up to his bedroom, into all of our bedrooms, and then down into the basement. Not there. Still nothing. And so now we're getting a little bit concerned. And so we started yelling quite loudly. We started yelling throughout the house, "Oli, where are you, buddy? Oli, man, where are you?" We yelled out into the yard. We yelled back into the garage one more time, desperate at this point. "Oli, man, where are you, dude?" And at this point, now panic is starting to set in. And Eric and I are looking at each other with like a sense of disbelief on our faces. Like, I don't know where he is. Do you know? I don't know. And so without even thinking, both of us instinctively in different directions, we just sprinted off in opposite directions around the block, right? Trying to figure out where in the world could he be. We're still yelling, "Oli, where are you, dude?" Nothing. Nowhere to be found. Now, I'm a pretty laid back dude. Our kids are well-behaved. We live in a pretty safe neighborhood. But at this point, I was as scared for one of my kids as I think I have ever been in my whole entire life. Erica and I were both very quickly reaching like full freak out mode. Where is our son? And this lasted for, it was a few minutes, I think, five maybe. It lasted for what felt like hours, until we got back to the garage and we walked past one of our cars to see Oli locked inside, his face full of tears, screaming his head off. He was screaming for us and we were screaming for him, but neither of us could hear anything because the snowblower was running the whole time. I cannot explain to you the relief that I felt after my mind had just begun to entertain all of the possibilities as to where my son could be. I'll never forget the feeling. I'll never forget the emotional imprint that that moment left on my life as a father to think that my son was lost. Have you ever been there before? Maybe you've also lost something important to you. Maybe it was small. Maybe you lost something like a set of keys or a phone or maybe even your wallet. Or maybe you lost a child at 1.2 at the mall, or you left a kid somewhere. Or maybe you lost something more important, like a relationship with a spouse or a parent or a friend, and now the relationship is kind of estranged. How do you feel in those moments when you realize that you've lost something? And maybe more specifically, what do you do? When you realize that you have lost something, what do you do in those moments? What lengths do you go to in order to find what it is that you lost? Now, as you think about that, as you think maybe about something in your life that you've lost, as you think to yourself about what you do in those moments, let me just pivot here and ask this question as well. Why is any of this really important? Okay, how is any of this conversation really relevant to what it is that I want to talk about today? It's all relevant. And it's because what I'm describing to you here, what I just spent a few minutes describing for all of us here today, it is actually the one sentence theme. What I've just been describing here, it is the one sentence summary of the entire Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And it is also the truth as to why churches exist today and why in the world we would start a brand new church here and now, right? The truth behind our existence as a church and the one sentence summary of the entire Bible from start to finish is this. God lost something, and he wants it back. That's the truth behind why we exist as a church, and it's the one sentence summary. God lost something so significant, and he desperately wants it back. What exactly, then, did he lose? Here's what he lost. He lost the sons and the daughters that he loves, that he created in his image. He lost the good and the perfect and the pleasing relationship that he had with us, with you, with me. And in a very real and a metaphorical way, he simply wants to bring us back home again. He wants us back. And that is the story that the entire Bible is ultimately telling. See, what we have to understand here is the Bible as a whole, it is not, kind of foundationally intended to be a mystery novel. I mean, it's not slowly, revealing little details to us, so that ultimately we can figure out, who done it. Okay? It's not a science book intended to describe the intricate details of the world today. It's not necessarily an encyclopedia or some reference resource, simply providing, facts and bits of information that we may be in search of at one point or another. At its core, it's a love story. It's the story of the great, great, great lengths that a loving father went to in order to win us back, to bring us back home again. And so now maybe the question you're asking is this: well, what happened? Where did we go? What happened to us? What happened to mankind so much so that now there is somewhere in which we need to be brought back? Well, if you go to the very beginning, to the book of Genesis, which I'm going to summarize for you here in just like a few sentences, what you see is this: that God created the world. He created the sun, the moon, the stars, the animals, the birds, the land, the sea, the sky, and it was absolutely breathtaking. It was perfect. And then after he created all that, then he created man and he created woman in his image. The Bible says he created them in his likeness to be like him and to be in a relationship with him in the middle of all that he created. And then very much like a wedding ring is a symbol of trust and commitment between a husband and a wife. God also then established a symbol between himself and mankind that he just created that would demonstrate the trust and the commitment between them. It was the tree that he placed in the Garden of Eden. And God told Adam and Eve, he said, I love you, and I created you all for this. Right, this is yours. This is all for you. And he said, and this tree, this is the only thing I ask. He said, this tree, it's going to be the symbol. This tree that I've placed here, that I've given you some instructions for, God said, it's going to be the symbol of your love and your commitment to me. Okay? And what did Adam and Eve do? So many of us know the answer. They broke their commitment. And they broke the trust that had been established between them and God. And in that moment, sin entered the world. Okay? Sin entered the world, and truthfully, this thing called sin, it's a virus that's far more contagious, and it's far more deadly than COVID-19. And it entered the world at that moment, and it spread like wildfire, and it continues to spread like wildfire throughout history. It's why there's shame. It's why there's anxiety. It's why there's depression and hurt and pain and evil and brokenness and broken relationships in the world today. It's because of this thing that we call sin that entered in. Think of the effects of this thing called sin like a mirror being shattered with a hammer. Okay? What once reflected back a perfect image is now fractured, and every piece containing a distorted image of what it was that was being reflected. That's what happened here. God's once perfect image reflected in humanity, and his once perfect relationship with humanity was now fractured and distorted into a million broken little pieces. And so it's worth considering, if you ask me, it's worth considering first how you might respond, how I might respond, how people today might respond if someone broke their commitment. It's worth considering how maybe you would respond if someone broke their commitment to you. What would you do if someone broke the bonds represented by your own wedding ring? Okay, maybe you'd say, you know what, forget about it. You're done. It's all over. We're done. You blew it. I'm calling this whole thing off. It's certainly an understandable response, but the question is, how would God respond when essentially the very same thing happened? How would God respond? We actually get to see how God would respond, and we get to see the very heart of God in the very first statement that God makes after sin enters the world. Adam and Eve, they're hiding in shame in the garden, and God comes looking for them, and here's what he says to them in Genesis 3, verse 9. Do not miss this. Genesis 3, 9 says this, but the Lord called to the man, right? To the woman, to the people that he created in his image. The Lord called to them, where are you? He called to them, where are you? Where are you? He wants to know. It's the very same thing that I wanted to know of my own son when I could not find him any longer. Where are you? It's what God wanted to know in that moment. Do you see what this is alluding to? Don't you see what this is pointing to? Finding that which is lost, it is what God is all about. It is his mission. And this moment that I just described here, it is the moment when that search and rescue mission began. Where are you? God wants to know. Where are you? God asks then in that moment. It's a question he has been asking ever since. Where are you? Okay. Now you might argue, how could God lose something? Right? Isn't he all-knowing? How could he lose something? Yes, he is all-knowing, but what we need to understand about God's question is this. It wasn't their location that God lost. It was their relationship, okay? God didn't lose track of them. He lost connection with them there in that moment. I think you get how this works, right? With estranged relationships maybe in your own life, you probably know where that person is physically. If there's some kind of tension in a relationship, you know where that person is physically. Heck, they might be right under the same roof as you, but you're still a million miles apart emotionally. Right? God knows where they are, but he knows that something isn't the same any longer. And so he wants to know what happened. Where did you go? And what we learn then about God from this one line and from this one question is this, that God is a missional God. Right? From that moment, he has been on a mission, and his mission is to search and to seek and to find what it is that he lost. It is God's why. And so then it makes sense, right? If we keep moving on, I said I'm kind of giving you a huge summary of the Bible from start to finish. It makes sense then if we move on to the what we call the New Testament, where Jesus enters the picture. It would make sense then that when God sent his son Jesus, he would send Jesus on the very same rescue mission, and Jesus wouldn't skip a beat. We're going to turn in a second here to Luke chapter 19, verse 10. And after a controversial decision that Jesus made to associate with, to even go to the house of a low-level tax collector named Zacchaeus, right? And everybody's up in arms about this. How could Jesus be spending his time with such scum? Okay? After everybody's in an uproar, Jesus makes it plain and clear that he too is on a mission, the very same mission of God, his father. Here's what he says to everybody who's so concerned about what it is that he's up to. Luke 19, verse 10, Jesus says this, for the Son of Man, he's referring to himself. He says, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. See, it's Jesus's why too. He's on a mission, saving, seeking, searching for, finding, and bringing back home again those who are lost. It's the very same mission that God was on. He lost something and he wants it back. Now, if I can pause here for just a second, I want to clarify something about this notion of referring to people as lost, right? Because I think we misuse or misunderstand the word lost sometimes. We either use it improperly or sometimes we're offended by it. We're offended by, you know, what we think it might be suggesting of us if someone suggested in a spiritual sense that we were lost. So let me clarify. Lost doesn't mean damned or judged. Lost doesn't mean condemned, especially in the church world. Too many people are afraid to say someone might be lost. Too many people are offended at the prospect of being labeled or considered to be lost. But we need to reclaim this word because it actually communicates something really, really beautiful. And I want you to see it here. The word lost, it actually signifies two things. You see it on the side screens here. The word lost actually signifies value and it signifies belonging. Right? To acknowledge that something is lost and then to care enough to go in search of it, it's to say that it has incredible value. Take my son Oli, for example, when I didn't know where he was. Why was my heart racing inside of my chest? Why did I instinctively start sprinting around the neighborhood looking for him? I mean, I could have just come back to Erica and said, hey, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, Air. We got Lucy, we got Siggy. Major league hitters, they would do anything to be hitting 2 out of 3 every game. What's the big deal? But would I ever do that? No way. Of course that I would do anything and everything to go find him. The reason that I would sprint around the block is because my son had immense and immeasurable value. I wouldn't go looking for him otherwise. When someone is lost so much that you go out in search of them, it's because of their incredible value. And the second thing the loss communicates that I mentioned is belonging. Right? To suggest that maybe you or that maybe I or that maybe we or that maybe some of us in the community here today, to suggest that someone is lost doesn't suggest that, you know, they're bad or wrong or you're on the naughty list or you're incapable or unintelligent or unsuccessful. Doesn't suggest any of that. It simply suggests that there is a place where you belong and that you have been displaced. Okay? That there's a place that you were intended to be, a place that you were created for from the beginning, right? To be in the house of the Father, to be in a relationship with Him, and you aren't there now, right? Lost means you were supposed to be in one place and you're not. You have been displaced, right? Can I just ask someone here today, maybe someone watching online today, is it possible that you are displaced today? When I summarize for you God's heart, when I summarize for you God's mission and tell you that God lost something and that that something just might be you, what I want you to hear in that is not God saying, oh boy, you're so messed up, or oh boy, you blew it. What I want you to hear in that is God saying, boy, you are so valuable. You are so worthwhile. You are so significant to me that I would do anything and everything to find you once again. What I want you to hear in that is that you belong somewhere. You belong here. Right, it breaks my heart to meet people who actually just feel like they don't belong, especially they don't belong in a church, right? They're outsiders, or they're on the fringe, or kind of in the margins, or all this is, you know, kind of new, right? And so we feel like we don't belong here, right? I always think of an old coworker of Erica's when we lived out in Colorado. I think I've told his story here before, right? He would not even, we were befriending him and excited about kind of being involved in his life in a little bit. And he would not even set foot into the auditorium like this, right? At the church where Eric and I attended. He wouldn't even set foot in there on a random Saturday morning at a community event that was simply being hosted at our church. He wouldn't go into that kind of worship space out of fear. He admitted to me, out of fear that like lightning would strike him down if he stepped inside. Imagine if he knew. Imagine if every single person on this planet knew, man, you are so valuable. You have so much worth and so much significance, and you belong here. Imagine if every person knew what God was really up to and what he wasn't up to in the world today. See, quite possibly one of the most famous and one of the most quoted verses of the Bible is John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, right? We know that verse. I just wish the next verse was just as well known because it makes clear what God was and is and isn't up to today. It's John 3:17, and it says this, for God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Folks, the fact that God considered us, that he considered you and me lost and in need of saving or rescuing, it's not an indication of his disappointment in us. It's an indication of his deep, deep desire to be reunited with us once again. And so this leads me to one of two things, and I'm gonna close with this. This all leads me to one of two things that I need you to know today. Because there's one of two things that I'm gonna share here as I finish. There's one of two things that is true of every single person here today or watching online. I don't care how long you've been coming to church. I don't care how many Bible verses you know. I don't care if you've been in church your whole life. There's one of two things that every single person here today or watching online needs to know when it comes to this missional God and the mission that he is on. Okay? It's one of two things you need to know. You're either the focus of God's mission or you're on mission with God. One of those two things is true of you. You're either the focus of God's mission or you're on mission with God. It's either the focus of God or it's with God. Okay, so some of you here today, you may not be sold on the whole God thing, on the church thing, on the Jesus thing. And if that's you, my goodness, I'm so glad that you're here. Our doors will be wide open to you every single Sunday that we exist. They'll be open to you just as you are. In fact, we do so much of what we do. We plan so much of what we do with you in mind. Why? Because you are the focus of God's mission. And as a result, you're the focus of our mission as well. Not because you're so bad or not because you're so pathetic or not because you're so messed up, but because you're so valuable. It's because there's a place that you were designed for, and maybe it's true that in this moment, this season in your life, you have been displaced, and God wants you back. And we as a church, we have joined God. This is why we exist. We have joined God in God's mission to do just that, to bring back what it is that has been lost. And so that leads me to the second of two things that I mentioned is true for all of you, right? Some of you, the focus of God's mission. For everyone else, you're on the mission with God. Okay? If God has already been successful in his search and rescue mission for you, then guess what? You just made the team, right? You just earned a spot on the opening day roster. You just earned a spot in God's starting lineup. And as a church, we understand, right? That's the part that we play. The Big C Church, right? And this church in particular, Mid-Current Church, we are committed to joining God. We're on the team, right? We've committed to joining God in God's mission. Mid-Current, the one thing that summarized the entire Bible in the one thing that is the first truth about why the church exists and about why Mid-Current Church exists is because God lost something and he is on a mission to get it back. And he's hoping that we'd be on that mission with him. He passed the baton to Jesus. Jesus passed the baton to us. And together, we want to reach more people. Together, we want to create spaces for real people and a real God to meet once again in powerful ways. For those of you who might still be the focus of God's mission, we're going to do every single thing we can to help you reunite. We're going to do everything we can to create spaces for you to meet God once again. For those of you who are on mission with God, all of us together, we got to understand the church doesn't exist for us. We are the church, and we exist for the world. We exist to join God in the mission that he is on. And so I'm praying that this fall, you too would be in on that mission with us somehow, somewhere. Let me pray. God, we're grateful for the start to a new kind of season of ministry, as we say here in the church. God, we're glad for a new beginning this fall. We're glad for the excitement that comes with it. Back into routine. We're excited for the environments that we're creating for students here. God, we're excited for the opportunities that we have to give back, not only here in our community, but here in this world, God. We're excited to be on mission with you, God. And so we're asking for your help, God, to make our next steps clear to us, God, about where we would go, about what we would do. God, I pray that right now you would help solidify in people's hearts and in their minds where they, you know, fall into this equation. God, if there are people here today that are realizing, you know what, maybe I am lost. Maybe there was a place for me and that I have been displaced. God, I pray that you would find a way to let them know of their incredible value, of their incredible significance to you, God. Would you find a way to let them know that there is a place that they belong and maybe that place is here? God, I pray that you would help them to know that, to feel that, to experience that, not to experience guilt or shame, but to experience your love and your grace that would call them back home again. God, for everyone else who feels like, you know what? I think I'm on the mission with God. God, I pray that you would help us to see our next steps, that you would help us to see the places that we move from being spiritual consumers to spiritual contributors. God, help us to understand that the church doesn't exist for us, but that we are the church. And that we exist to be on mission with you in everything that you want to see happening here in this church, here in this community, here in this world, God. Our next steps, and help us to pursue them boldly and confidently, knowing exactly whose team it is we're on and whose mission we are out to fulfill. We give you thanks for this morning, God, and we pray all of these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Hey, thank you so much for being here for the start of this new series. A couple things before you go. If you are in need of prayer for anything today, there's going to be someone up to my right who is going to be available to pray for you for whatever it is that might be happening in your life, in your family, in your world right now. So please take advantage of that if you need it. For those of you sticking around for MC Connections, we're going to flip the room as quick as we can, get lunch ready to go, and we're going to dive in. If you have not heard or had the chance to sign up for MC Connections, find our next director, Aaron, at the welcome desk. And if these next 4 weeks is an environment that you want to be a part of, we'll get you all signed up. If we don't see you this afternoon, we will plan to see you next week right back here at 10:30 as we continue in the second week of our series, Two Truths and a Lie. We'll see you then. God bless you.